Name, Jason Horsley. Profession, Limitless. This is The Limitless, the podcast in between. You are now listening.
You can walk an island way and you work all the dough and dust. Your eyes were staring at me while playing your guitar.
I came walking a long way just for another chap. Then I saw her in the crowd and I looked her in the eyes.
So what's the agenda?
What's the drill? Well, this has all happened quite fast because I just came across French radio like 4 days ago or something, less than a week.
Yeah.
Thing is, for the podcast, for The Limitless, as I said to you, I think I'm looking always for music that's very marginal, that most people won't have ever heard before.
Cool. Yeah.
And it's always a challenge to find new music, new songs that I want to use. So I felt like I'd hit a pay dirt when I found French radio, because I just, every song I listened to, I loved it. So as a result of that, I got quite excited.
Thanks for contacting me. Cool.
Sure. First question I had was about what we're doing here, like doing interviews. I mean, I got the impression that you like to keep a low profile. Is that a correct impression?
Well, put it like this: I only, the other interview you know about is the only interview I've done. So I suppose at the time I just said, stay anonymous,
You haven't been actively avoiding exposure then?
No, not actively avoiding it, but not actively seeking it either. Just stick the songs up. I enjoy recording music. This new little 8-track recorder just makes life so easy. You just pop out, just bang out a track. Somebody said it, unlike, knock them out like a sausage factory, just whack them out, without too much thought, a little bit preconceived. It's not totally spontaneous, but I'm into that idea of instant composition,
Mm-hmm.
Spur of the moment, a drum beat will trigger a bass line which will trigger the rest, and then suddenly you have a track, and then lyrics would be done separately,
Right.
Or lyrics, pre-written, just to have a load of lyrics, just to see what works,
Most of which are inaudible, right?
Lyrics are, inaudible, it's not, you think of rock and roll, though, in general, think of one of my favorites would be The Falls. You think of how much of his lyrics can you actually decipher? Some, yes, but, it'd give us 40, 50%, It's not necessary. It's not always necessary, but yes, it's not intentional fully. I think it's partly bad recording techniques, because this is what I know. I don't know technically. I wouldn't know much about recording. I just bang them out,
But I mean, I don't know how many songs you've got. An awful lot of songs out there, so I certainly haven't managed to listen to them all yet. But I haven't found one where you just use your voice without filtering it. Is that right?
Do you know? Oh, yeah, I tend to, and that came up in the other interview. Why would you do that? I suppose my voice is like anybody else's voice, so you want to make it a bit more, intense, a bit of depth. But, the distortion does that. It gives power and intensity,
I didn't get the sense that you were imitating anyone or anything. I mean, the closest similar kind of music to me was the stuff that David Lynch is doing, actually, quite recently.
I've heard his recent album. Yeah, he did an album about, was it last year? And does he do a kind of high voice or a kind of manipulated voice?
There is some of that. It's completely distorted as what you're doing. It's definitely the closest similarity I could come up with.
Feel of.
Right.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, in a similar way, my experience of French radio is that it's not exactly the same as music. I don't like, generally, I think of music as different from what you're doing. I mean, I guess the simplest way to do it is it's sound. What I'm experiencing listening to French radio is it's definitely the musical element. Like, I can dance to it. It's got a melody and all the rest of it, but it has so much else going on that it's the feeling of actually overhearing something that's going on in some subterranean depths, you know.
Yeah, I always like intense music anyway, you know, but maybe, I don't know, whether it's Joy Division or The Fall, you know, there's an intensity there. What the purpose of that is, I don't know, just pure expression, is it?
Different kind of state of consciousness when you're making music to say when you're doing other stuff?
Well, you know, possibly, yeah. You know, when you go far enough into it, you do go into, especially if you go there enough, you know, you go deeper into it. It is like going into a zone, yeah, I would say. But, you know, again, I would do Zen meditation, which I think helps the flow of creativity. It just opens up that whole pool or whatever it is, well, of just, in my mind anyway, my experience, it seems to help, you know. So I'd say that would be another factor, that and just a general everyday just hashing out something, you know.
That's something else you have in common with David Lynch then.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Chad. I only hear that, like, in the last, let's say, 5 years, I may have heard that he's into TM, yeah. And I've heard a few speeches he gave on the subject. I'm a fan of David Lynch, definitely, yeah. And I was surprised, initially, when I thought, he meditates and he comes out with this crazy stuff, you know? And then I thought, I meditate and I come out with this crazy stuff.
He swears by it. I mean, he's claimed that his, even when he's making films, he will make sure he does it every day, and that keeps the creativity flowing, is his.
I would definitely agree, you know, definitely. And, you know, again, it's all about consistency. It's like, I suppose I get the idea, you know, that you can hear all sorts of flights of fancy about things like meditation and altered states of consciousness and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, I think it's just no free lunch. You put in the work, you're going to get a result. It's cause and effect. If you sit down there for 20 minutes every day or regularly, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, you will get a result. You know, I think it's no big mystery or, you know, wow, what's all this? What kind of altered state? It probably is an altered state. You probably are going deeper into stuff, but you don't really need to know, if you know what I mean. You're not conscious of what that is, but you are aware that you're in a different place, you know?
Right.
You know? I don't know if you had that experience of anything like that.
Well, I don't meditate. I haven't meditated for years and years. But I'm doing house renovations, and I notice how and I actually did some renovations before talking to you because I thought I'd be in a more kind of open place than if I was sitting at my computer writing and stuff and then just phoned you up. I kind of like to be physical. That's probably as close as I get to a more meditative state. But certainly, when I'm working on house renovations, my interiority, my inner space is very different than when I'm writing or working on a podcast.
Right, so anything you concentrate on can be a meditation, I suppose.
Yeah. Right. Well, this is the thing with liminalism that what I'm trying to explore here, which is like there's a space. The word comes from threshold, so it's the space between things. So it has to do with ritual, like tribal rituals where they have a rite of passage, so where children are initiated into adulthood. They go into this liminal space where they're neither the child or the adult, and you know all the sort of laws of the society are suspended. Like this zone in which there's no structures, there's no rules, there's no preconceptions about what to expect.
Do you think there is let's say from childhood, infant child to adult? It's kind of almost like an evolution of consciousness itself, you know, as you go, you know?
Oh, I think it's supposed to be. There's this guy, Joseph Chilton Pierce. I spoke to him recently. He's 89 now, but he writes about how in adolescence there's supposed to be this opening of the senses, the opening of the heart, when the constructed identity or the ego, which has been a defense system for the child in order to navigate, you know, reality, supposed to sort of come down like a chrysalis opening and then we open up and we enter into this totally new state of being. But in our society, it doesn't happen for reasons we could talk about for hours, probably.
So
people stay stuck in this kind of arrested development where they're children walking around in adults' bodies and they've never actually gone through that initiation process.
Yeah, there's like the idea of, you know, the ego as, I don't know if I've read quotes, I don't know who was I reading, I can't remember, but it was like the ego is like the biggest case of false identification, where we identify with this ego that is not really us. So something like meditation is a disidentifying with something. You have your mind, your body is, your mind and body are basically you, roughly speaking. It's you, it's your mind, your body. If you look at them long enough, look at them, feel your body, look at your thoughts, so you're just constantly looking at them, you slowly realize that, oh, well, now I'm the thing looking at them, I'm not those things. So you're disidentifying with them. And that's the process of meditation itself, of freeing yourself from the confines of that mind, body, not that you're, you know, in one sense you are those things, but, you know, you are more than those things also, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So as you witness them, you pull away from them, and in a way, you know, they say your whatever, consciousness expands, etc. So that's, you know, from a meditation point of view, I imagine, and again, I've just read stuff, but that's the process, you know.
So I think creativity and liminalism are closely related, that if we, we take ourselves into areas that we're not familiar with, we don't actually know. It's like being in territory and you've got a map, and then you go to the edge of where your map tells you what's what, and you keep going and you don't have a map anymore. That would be a liminal realm. So actually, I say creativity, but for me, doing house renovations is kind of liminal, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing, really. I have to just improvise. And and that place of not knowing, like the false identity, as you call it, it doesn't, it can't actually keep up, because it doesn't, it can't rely on its usual tool set and say, well, I know about this because I'm an artist or I'm a whatever. Suddenly it's like it sort of withdraws, and then something else can move in, which is this consciousness. I'd say it's in the body, like the body itself is tuned into this deeper consciousness. It's instinct, but also even more than instinct, I think. And then that thing takes over, it moves into the space, and then these amazing things happen.
That's interesting. Like, you know, as soon as something is labeled or categorized, it's almost dead. I mean, that's not 100% true, but you know, you could say with music, if you go to the edge and go somewhere else, then you create something that hasn't been created before.
So that's what French Radio communicates to me, and also I sent you to Big Blood, because I had the same thing with Big Blood.
They're good. They're very good. Yeah.
For me, it has that same liminal quality of this is coming out spontaneously. This isn't being directed by the conscious mind. I guess the larger point now for me is that the more and more that I'm discovering what creativity is for me, which is this expression of my interior being, whatever, my soul, the less and less I am interested in being established, being successful, being a super genius, as you put it at your website, but also the less trusting I am of people who've done that, people who've actually turned their creativity into an identity and established that identity in the world, and so they are the super geniuses, and they're there to be worshipped by the rest of us. That whole thing seems off to me now. I mean, it always did, but
although, you know, it's amazing that somebody can make a living out of, you know, their art, you know, because it would be difficult, you know, but I suppose it just, people just step into it, or I don't know, it just happens for them. I don't know.
I don't think it just happens. I mean, you have to be really driven, I think.
Or is there just, I don't know, a karma element? That's just some people, this happens, some people, this happens. You know, some people, no matter how destructive or crazy they go, it doesn't affect them being famous, you know?
But do you, do you know anyone like that? I mean, how do we know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I suppose, it's all appearances, and maybe behind it all, people just want to make it, you know, that's why they make it, because they want to, that they put that energy in that direction, possibly.
I think so, and I think I'm also quite conspiratorially minded, and I've done a lot of writing in the last few years and research around this whole paratainment, I call it, like the military and entertainment complex, and how entertainers, it's political, like show business is very political, because entertainment figures have a lot of influence. In a way, they have more influence than political figures, because, you know, kids actually look up to them and imitate them. If you think someone like Russell Brand, for example, it seems to me that it's not random, it's that those people are actually selected. I don't know how conscious it is, and how much it's by committee, and how much it's kind of in this liminal realm where it's not being consciously directed. But to whatever extent, I feel that the individuals who become established, they become part of the establishment, and so they are actually acting as... They're injecting novelty into the culture, and they're actually propping up a culture which otherwise would be flagging without their input. So I think that they are kind of recruited in some way.
Well, did you ever hear William S. Burroughs, did you ever hear him talking about control and things like this, about, like, along the lines of what you're saying, but, you know, ultimately, I think he came to the conclusion that, you know, he said, well, who does control? You know, that in a way it's a nameless, there are no pilots to this
right.
huge, whatever it is, multinational giant ship or whatever it is. You know, his idea is behind it all, or on top of it all, there may be controlling pockets, but it's a bit, you know, basically it's just striving towards the future where who knows what's going to happen, you know, what can happen, you know.
Well, it's kind of like the Borg, I think. Like, who controls the Borg, you know, in Star Trek?
Yeah,
It's all this one synthetic organism. It doesn't even have autonomy, and yet it's somehow striving to expand, you know, and to devour. And that's the whole capitalist culture seems to be like that. It seems to actually have become this kind of artificial intelligence organism that is... just devouring in order to expand. And I mean, this is really the conflict that I have that goes really deep, which is I do want to, I love creativity, and I want what I do to reach people so that I can connect to people like you and I are connecting.
Yeah.
But I don't want to actually I don't want to be feeding the Borg. I don't want to be adding more stuff to the culture, because to me the culture is actually anti-life. It's
yeah, but maybe you can influence it in a good way, you know.
Do you think?
Yeah, well, you know.
It seems if you influence the Borg, you'd have to be assimilated by it, you know? And then once you're assimilated by it, game over.
Yeah, so you could say, right, there's a lightness and there's a darkness in the world, but you know, not everything is a darkness. You know, it is possible to be successful, famous, and whatever, and actually be a channel for good things. You know, that's possible also. You know, so you could be part of this machine and system, but still be positive and destructive and creative in a good way. You know? So it's not necessarily to, you don't need to isolate yourself completely, I don't think. You know?
I'm gonna have a